Easter is coming up, and I just can't wait to have the whole family in one place. And of course, what's Easter without an awesome Easter brunch? Now, I don't know about your family, but mine is a little picky, and I really wanted to impress them with something delicious. A friend told me I should check out Total Wine & More. It was crazy! They must have every wine and beer imaginable. I told one of their friendly experts my situation, and they found me just the thing. This sparkling wine is going to be absolutely perfect for brunch, even with my picky family. I know next time I need something, I'm shopping at Total Wine and More.
Welcome to the 15th episode of the NBA podcast. My name is Morten Jensen. Alongside me, Sarah Chilea. How are you, Sarah?
I'm well, Morten. How are you?
I'm doing well. We're without Brian, so of course I'm good. No, I'm kidding. Brian's supporter couldn't be there today. He kind of busy, and I believe he even missed the first half of the finals, didn't he?
Yep, poor Brian.
He was flying. He ordered a flight during the exact time of Game 7. That's... Yeah,
he was very, very overconfident in his pick.
Yeah,
which I guess we can't really blame him for. But
I think we all were. Like, mm-hmm. Everyone who really chose Golden State were overconfident.
Yeah, definitely. Although, going into Game 7, I said, it feels crazy, but I'm leaning toward Cavs. And,
well, there
I
you mean, go.
Did you think that or no? Still not at all.
No, I actually recorded a Danish podcast, and I was asked that question, and I was like, I'm not going to make a prediction because I feel it's so 50-50. Mm. I just didn't dare come up with a prediction. I had no idea.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like safe at any point with Golden State even being at home.
So you still didn't feel confident that they were going to win. That's the thing. It was so weird. It's like they're at home, they're Golden State, but it's still, I still felt like the Cavs were going to take it because it's like, you know, Bogut out, not to make excuses, but Bogut out, Iggy hobbled, Steph never looked right, you know, all the things that made them a great team, you know, those layers started to peel back a little bit. It's like any team, if that starts to happen to them, and I don't care who it is, you know, they're going to have to make adjustments, you know, other people have to step into roles that they're not used to, and hey, LeBron was playing great at that point, and you just never know what's going to happen.
The Bogut and Iggy injuries were definitely on my mind, but more so, and you touched on this as well, the Stephen Curry predicament, or whatever you want to call it, like, what happened? Like, was he healthy? Wasn't he healthy? I have no idea what's going on with him right now. But he just looked so timid, so passive throughout the course of the series. I think he had like one game where he went off for 38.
Yeah,
I want to say, and then from there on out, or outside of that, rather, he was just like he wasn't the MVP. Let's just take it to that one.
Mm, it was very strange. And you know what else? Like, I guess we can get into that when we cover the game a little more, but. It's like those last 4.5 minutes or whatever when Golden State didn't score, they really went away from... It's like they failed to recognize that what makes them special isn't, you know, the isolation, you know, even though they have the talent to do that, especially when Steph's rolling, what makes them special is the ball movement that they have, the fact that everybody's a threat, you know, and they can always get good looks. They went away from that a lot. Like, they had that one good shot where Steph was wide open for three and he missed it, which was strange, but, you know, was the new normal in the last few weeks of the playoffs. And then after that, they did. They just kind of went into isolation chucking, which, conversely, I mean, the Cavs were basically doing the same thing, but that's kind of their thing, you know?
Yeah.
So what you have to do if you're the Warriors is, you know, create better looks for yourself with your movement, and they weren't doing it. They were going ISO for ISO, and it did not work out for them.
And if there's like one team I wouldn't go ISO for ISO against, that's like Cleveland, because they have the personnel to go ISO a lot more than Golden State does. Like, I agree with you. I think Steph really has the ability to be a great isolation player if needed.
Right.
But they rarely need it, and technically I would argue that they shouldn't have needed it at all in Game 7. They should, like you said, just have moved the ball, set a lot of screen and rolls, but there were a lot of these desperation shots. Like, I believe at the beginning of the game, they started, I think Klay took like a heat check shot without having made a shot beforehand. Like, And I mentioned it on Twitter, and some of the feedback I got was, well, it's early. Those shots will, you know, will sort of like come back in value. It's fine. Well, I'm sitting here thinking, if they didn't heat check three out of the first, I want to say like six shots, that could have been a totally different game. They could have actually won it.
Yeah, exactly. I can't argue with that. They just didn't get quality looks too, you know, down the stretch because of that. And it's like, they kind of needed somebody to settle them down and say, hey, this is not what we do. We got to get better looks, you know. So they had plenty of chances. I mean, I don't know. It's funny how, you know, different narratives arise out of a game. But it's like, I don't know if we're talking about that enough. It's like, it really was anybody's game. Nobody could score for about 5 minutes. And yeah. You know, any one of those shots goes down, it could be a different game, but they couldn't make anything.
So I'm completely flabbergasted by the fact that this series ended up being 703 points to Cleveland and 699 for Golden State. Like, this was about as close as you could possibly get in a 7-game series. And like, I was sitting there thinking, we should just stretch it to like the best out of 9 to get like an idea of who's the best team right now. Yeah. When Cleveland won, it was well earned. I mean, they just kicked their asses in game 6 and 7, and they played beautiful. Oh, game 5 as well. Right. I really have no words for how the Cavs played in those final 3 games. It seemed like they had figured them out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's saying a lot, because Golden State is really tough to figure out because of their ball movement, their shooting ability, the fact that Steph can pull up from freaking 38 feet, and I'm not even being sarcastic.
Right.
I mean, they were so unpredictable, but somehow it seemed like Cleveland was ready for the unpredictable.
Yep. And they just started answering. I have to say that probably the last 3 games of that series were the most that I've actually appreciated and enjoyed watching LeBron play.
Mm.
I don't know if it was the fact that he was making like mid-range shots and threes, which, you know, he doesn't often do. The fact that his numbers were insane, or I think probably coupled with the fact that he wasn't playing my team, so I could enjoy it a little more, you know. I don't know, but I really appreciated the way that he played. And then Kyrie, like, we have to give Kyrie credit, because, you know, even LeBron there at the end of game 7 was really struggling to get a bucket. Like, everything was short. He had like a little hook shot in the lane that came off the front of the rim. Yeah. Kyrie was the one who pulled up, put it down.
That was awesome. A ballsy shot.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw it, I just, as soon as you released it, I just had a feeling this one is going to go in.
Mm.
Like, this game had that vibe, you know, coming down, not that much time left, Kyrie against Curry. I just had a feeling he would drain that one. Like, that entire game just had some sort of smell to it. Like, it would finish in a very awesome way.
Yeah.
Like, but you didn't know like who would make the big shot, if it would be Golden State or it'd be Cleveland, and then Kyrie just came up, and when he took that isolation three on Steph, you just kind of sat there, went, all right, there it was. There was the thing that I've been waiting for by somebody, regardless of who, and then it just stuck, and they kept the lead. I was really surprised that Golden State didn't get like a better offensive set going afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, credit to Kevin Love for getting out on Steph, but yeah.
Yeah, I think Steph even mentioned that afterwards, that particular possession he probably should have tried to go by Kevin instead of just dancing and trying to get that three.
Yeah,
he did say that he settled too much, and that's probably true. But, they were just weird, you know? Like, all game, but especially that last 5 or 6 minutes. It's even the last possession, I mean, they're fair enough, they're down 4 and they only have a few seconds left, but they lost a bunch of seconds looking for the 3, and then, you know, I think it ended up out of bounds, and it was a very strange ending to the game.
Yeah, behind the back pass Curry had that went out of bounds as well. Like, that, I mean, everyone had the same reaction on Twitter as well. Everyone was like, what was he thinking? Like, where the hell was his head at? And I'm wondering if LeBron, in some of the previous games where he just blocked his shot in Cleveland and he like looked at him, I don't know. I have this feeling he just somehow got into his head, like significantly so, because Curry just did not seem like himself at all. And it seemed like he was very timid, tried to avoid contact, and he played like through the motions, really.
Yeah. It's weird because people say, well, he throws that a lot. Well, yeah, but, you know, that's like a game 41 against Minnesota pass, you know, not a not a game 7 of the finals pass. So, yeah, it was strange. I don't know. I don't, maybe LeBron did get in his head. Maybe his knee was hurting. I have no idea. But I think people have pointed out that his numbers in the paint went way down kind of as the playoffs went on, when he's usually a really good finisher. So I don't know. Obviously, LeBron got to a couple of them, but he didn't get to all of them. So I'm not sure what happened. But yeah, we got to talk about that block. That block was insane. I was, because I had just tweeted, I'm like, man, Kyrie has to touch the ball more here. Yeah, because he really had it rolling earlier. LeBron's slowing down right now. Let's get Kyrie the ball on offense, see what happens. And then Kyrie threw up that floater that was like the worst miss he could have had. And here comes Steph and Iggy, and you think, for sure, this is 2 points. There's no way.
Oh, yeah.
There's no way it isn't. Oh, yeah. And it, I literally did not see LeBron coming. Like, he came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And I was out of my seat across the room screaming, like, are you kidding me? I don't know how Brian didn't bring his plane down. He said he streamed the final half.
Oh, yeah.
He was like, how did he react to that? That was insane. What a play.
That was a Tayshaun block.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. It's so weird.
At first, I thought he like would hit the backboard with the ball.
Mm.
Like, the ball hit the backboard first, and I was expecting a whistle. And then the replay came, and he was like, how close was that?
It was, but he got it. He definitely got it. He did. It was weird, because, like, Iggy, he kind of double-clutched. We have to give credit. I think it was JR who was back. And so Iggy kind of double-clutched under JR, which took that fraction of a second longer. And then it was weird because his shot, it didn't like go into the backboard. It went like straight up before. Mm. Like if he could have just gotten it off the glass just a little sooner. But he didn't. LeBron got to it. Just insane.
And LeBron hasn't done that chase down for a while. Mm-mm. It seems like he did it a lot early on with Miami and during his first stint with the Cavs. And then when he returned to Cleveland, it seemed like he wasn't going to rely on his athleticism a whole lot anymore. But this was game 7. He wasn't about to go out like that.
Yep.
He took everything he had and then just pounded away defensively, offensively, that block. I mean, my God. And like that, this adds to the legacy of LeBron. I think after the game, I saw, you know, a lot of hot takes from a lot of people, right? So they are to be ignored because a lot of people at that point are caught up in feelings and whatever. Right. But I mean, I do think he's now solidified himself as a top 5 player of all time. Not to go into like the rankings debate, because then we could sit here for hours. But yeah, I mean, I have him in my top 5 now, just because of this series and what he did. Like, this was David versus Goliath.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just one throw of a stone. This was like so many throws. He just kicked Goliath's ass, right? And you got to give him props for that. Like, one thing I want to note, which is also the criticism that went against him, because of course LeBron is going to get critiqued for something. Oh, he had Kyrie, he had Kevin Love. Like, seriously? I mean, I get the prime Dwayne Wade and prime Chris Bosh argument. I get that. Yeah. But, like, Kevin Love played horrifically, and Kyrie, even at his best, and I have, you know, developed a higher appreciation for Kyrie, he's still a one-end player. His defense is still shoddy. So, I mean, these are not like Wade and Bosh. I mean, and if you're trying to compare those two with Wade and Bosh, yeah, Kyrie and Kevin are going to lose every single time. Mm-hmm. So I felt this was not like a LeBron star team. This was just a very good squad surrounding him, and he made the most of it.
Yeah.
So the whole LeBron had stars all around him cliche, not working this year around. Not this time.
Yeah. And I mean, how many teams that have won championships can you point at and say, well, they had like one star who drug them to the championship? That's just Dallas. Not how it works usually. Yeah, yeah. Okay. The Mavs. But you still have Jason Kidd. His yeah. twilight year, sure, but you know, so
it just... No, but you're right. Like, that's really the exception, right? Yeah. Dallas. I mean, I can't really think of anyone else.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's tough to knock a player for that. And like you said, Miami makes sense. Okay. Especially since he sought it out and, you know, they planned that and they were in their primes at the time. But yeah. Yeah. I would agree with you that Dwayne and Bosch were better players to begin with, you know, than Kevin and Kyrie. But the point that you made about Kyrie's defense, I want to go back to that quick because I think I didn't want to make this point right after because I didn't want to rain on the parade, but I think this playoffs showed me that I want to see Kevin Durant and Kyrie giving a darn about defense more often. Because when they did, I thought they were, you know, Kevin Durant was really good. Kyrie was at least passable when he cared, you know, when he really was putting the effort in. I just want to see that more often. It's like, where is that all season long? Because they're certainly capable of doing more than what they do in the regular season. So I need to see it.
And when you say Durant, I mean, are you talking about, like, overall some of the star players who could, like, participate more defensively, or did you mean Kevin Love?
No, I mean Durant going back to the Western Conference Finals.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. He actually, like, he had moments there where you could see, like, in the Conference Finals series where when he was on defensively, he was a complete game changer.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on Dre. And then on the few occasions where he lapsed, they just, I mean, it was a whole different Oklahoma City squad. So I agree with you. He's got, like, so much defensive potential.
So much.
The long arms, the long legs, the athleticism. Like, yeah, and Kyrie doesn't really have a whole lot of that. But I do think he's got the movement, though. Because he shadows the ball well. And it doesn't seem like he loses his man. It's more like that he loses him off a screen, maybe. But if he just fights through a little bit more and maybe watches some more tape and finds some higher form of appreciation for angles and location and figuring out, okay, where does this guy like to get his shots, then yeah, I think he could actually become better.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were some lapses in the finals where you kind of saw the problem, but
right.
Yeah, I do agree that he's got more potential as defender than what he's shown. Yeah. Same goes for Damian Lillard, honestly.
Yeah. And his canter, you know, he showed potential in the playoffs too. It's like everyone thought he was terrible. Now everyone complained that Spurs didn't mix him up in pick and roll enough, but you know, he definitely looked better in the playoffs and met the challenges much more than he ever had in his career before then. It's like, you know, every team has vulnerabilities and holes, right? But there are some that we're realizing when people play at their top level don't need to be the holes that they are. Yeah. Like Kyrie doesn't need to be a huge hole on defense.
No.
So I was excited by the way that they played it. Like, I just want to see more players caring about playing on both ends all the time, like Kawhi. And I know people made jokes about LeBron not caring about defense anymore throughout the regular season. And a lot of times it seemed true, you know. But, I mean, he carries more of a load, so I kind of understand that. And he's getting older. But, I just want to see players giving it everything on both ends.
Yeah, and the LeBron point is true. I mean, I do think that even during his prime, he did have a tendency to just, like, step up for 2 minutes and then step back down. He wasn't really all that consistent, and all the Defensive Player of the Year talk was dreadfully premature as far as I was concerned. Right. But outside of that, he definitely was the most consistent defender when he wanted to. Like, when he wanted to, he was by far the most consistent defender in playoff series and in games. And, like, we saw it here in the finals. He was continuously on both ends.
Yep.
In Miami, we saw him at times coast throughout the course of a series. And then when it was time, he would step up and he would get all this credit. Hey, LeBron, shut down this guy for 2 minutes and close the game. Yeah, but you wouldn't have needed to do that if you'd stepped up prior to the game. But yeah, okay, yep. So be it. But now, in this round, particularly when he knew that Kyrie and Love weren't like big defensive assets, yeah, he knew it was up to him, and he freaking did it. Like, the way that he guarded Draymond at times, like just denying him simple entry passes to Bogut, or just preventing him from passing the ball around to a cutting Steph or Clay. And man, I mean, that was some wicked individual defense.
Yep, definitely. We need to see that. Like you said, you know, I understand that he's getting older, but yeah, there are definitely times that he takes off, and people don't usually want to call him out for it because he's LeBron, I guess. But like you said, he's done that throughout his career. Yeah, when he wants to be on, he's on, and you can see that he's still capable, plenty capable as a defender. But it just depends how interested he is at the time.
That actually reminds me, I've got a little bit of a theory regarding the whole anti-LeBron crowd. I think a lot of it has to do with the pro-LeBron crowd. I don't think really it's a discussion about LeBron per se. I think it's because when you have people who grow up with LeBron as their primary player, they're more inclined to dismiss previous legends and previous players and then try to sort of enhance LeBron's worth and place him in areas where he may not be deserving of, at least not yet. And I think that has pissed off a lot of people who maybe watched the games for a long time and knows that, okay, he's great, but don't crown his ass yet. And that has somehow taken a life of its own. And now when LeBron is meeting criticism, it's not really, this is just my personal opinion, I don't think it's painted on him specifically, but it's more like an attempt to quiet the LeBron fans. Because this finals in particular, I mean, I saw at least like the anti-crowd and the pro-crowd come out, and both of them had so many ridiculous arguments. It really, I mean, my eyes still hurt, Sarah. I just want to quote Joakim Noah right now. Like, where's the love? Just forget about all that. Just enjoy it. Shut the hell up about all that. He'll find his place in history on his own.
Yeah. And we don't have to decide it right now, especially since the guy's still playing.
Exactly.
That's, you know, this isn't usually we're in a rush, like you said, to try and write down history now all the time as it's happening, before it happens. That's not how it works. Yeah. I was on Facebook the other day, which is a place that you should never go. And I saw a LeBron fan. And this was, well before the finals was over, somewhere in the middle. And there was some kind of picture that he posted, and his argument was, well, this is what sets us apart from you Steph Curry fans, is we've been with LeBron from day one. We rooted for him, you know, when he was a rookie, when he was drafted. And, like, do you really think that you deserve all that much credit for that? He's been exalted since he was in high school. Like, he's been the chosen one forever. And so I don't think you get a lot of credit for being with him from day one, because everybody has been with him from day one. Everyone knew he was going to be really, really good. So to compare that to Curry, I just think it's kind of silly. There are so many silly arguments that, like you said, why? This is so unnecessary. And just enjoy, first of all, two great players, and second of all, what turned out to be a really great series. So,
yeah. Now, really think about it. Like, in 2001, which is 15 years ago, that's when the buzz around LeBron really started.
Mm-hmm.
that's a long ass time. And he's only 31 right now.
Yep.
I mean, yeah. So yeah, I totally get what you're saying. He might be the most talked about player of all time.
Probably. I remember seeing a high school game of his on ESPN way back, you know. It's like he's been around, he's been talked about. He's been called, you know, a great one, the next one, the chosen one, the next MJ, whatever, since he was a kid. So to say, well, we deserve credit because we've been with him from the beginning. I mean, I guess, but not really. It's okay. Calm down.
I don't understand why people would need to discredit, like, Warriors fans. Like, I know that there's a lot of Steph fans right now who's come out, like, becoming bandwagon fans, but there's, like, a healthy dose of Warriors fans that have been here since he was drafted. Like,
yes.
Why should they be dismissed? They're sitting there going, hello, we rooted for him from the very first day.
Exactly.
Yeah, but, well, credit to you guys. Like,
Yeah, like you said, Warriors fans have been down. Like, they've always been good fans. So, yeah. That doesn't make sense.
Speaking of Facebook, by the way, and you know, the fact that people have a tendency to like, crown careers before they even begin.
Mm-hmm.
I actually saw a link. Some of my friends liked it, so, you know, it pops up in my feed.
Right.
Where it says, is Ben Simmons destined already to become a Hall of Famer? Like, it's... The dude hasn't even gotten drafted yet. Oh. And, I mean, wow. Wow, people are so quick. Like, if he has but one bad rookie season, then that talk is all going to go away and people are going to discredit him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, he's a bust already. Is he the biggest bust of the last decade? Yeah, it'll be. Yeah.
There would definitely be that. And it would be like in a slideshow because then it's going to be like, watch here, the top 10 busts of all time. And it's going to be so horrifically put together. And, oh,
why,
man.
Morton? Why do we want to do that? Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Media sucks, Sarah. Media sucks. And that's why I'm entering the field
pursuing
of media
it?
Because
yeah.
I'm an idiot. Yeah, I'm an idiot. So, but okay, well, everyone knew that beforehand. So
you're gonna turn it around, though. It is weird, though. Like, I guess it's like the desire to be first on the bus. You know, like, I'm gonna be the one who calls it. Ben Simmons is gonna be a Hall of Famer. But I don't know. There's no way to know that now. Let's just watch him for a season or two and see what happens.
Yeah. Like, he could be good. He could become decent. It's just. I like the fact of not knowing as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of my biggest enjoyments when it comes to basketball. Like, some of the best things I know is watching, like, if you can't watch every game, obviously. But so in the morning, if you didn't catch a couple of games, then you obviously check the box scores. And then sometimes a guy pops out and you start thinking, okay, he's had like 3-4 good games in a row, like really good games. From my case, it was Will Barton.
Mm-hmm.
And then I started picking it up a little bit and started watching some games with him. And he kept doing it and he kept getting good. I love that feeling of seeing someone just break into the scene and prove how good he is.
Right.
Come out of nowhere. That's part of the romanticism with the NBA, that you never really know who can step up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So instead of having all these predictions, and hell, I've written about 2,000 articles in my life, so I'm pretty sure I've said something similar at some point. I just appreciate the fact that people can come out of the woodworks and just,
become all-stars. Yeah, it doesn't happen for everybody right away. They don't come in as all-stars, but they improve. And that's beautiful to see a person put in the work and just continuously get better. I mean, like you said, that is one of the best things about sports, is kind of how unpredictable it is, which is a great segue into if you want to talk about how we look at this season. To me, it's a success because I think we often have it be the case that the team that everyone thinks is going to win the championship doesn't win. But this year it seemed written in stone from the very beginning of the season. Yeah, like, we all knew the Warriors have this. Who's going to be second place, really? And we thought we knew that, too. It's like, well, the Cavs and the Warriors are going to the finals. Warriors are going to win.
Yeah.
And it was just great to have, I mean, obviously not for Warriors fans, and I'm sorry, But it was just nice that, you know, it proved itself true again. It's unpredictable, and that's why the saying that's why they play the games exists. You know, you don't know what's going to happen.
No, I agree. I thought the regular season, and to a larger extent, a big chunk of the playoffs this year was bad. Mm-hmm. I do think the NBA saw a loss of competitiveness this year because so many teams are rebuilding, retooling. I mean, hell, if we look at the Atlanta Hawks, I believe they won 48 games this year. At the trading deadline, they were considering blowing it up. Mm. Like, this is a team that finished, like, what, third or fourth in the East. And at the deadline, they were like, well, maybe we should blow it up. That's, like, the mentality of so many teams right now because they're looking at the Warriors and they're looking at San Antonio and they're thinking, okay, for the next 2 or 3 years, we don't have any chance anyway, so we might as well rebuild. It seems like that's been going around. Combine that with disappointments like Milwaukee and Chicago, and you got a league that suddenly is missing in competitiveness, honestly. And not suggesting that records were inflated or whatever. I mean, make those assumptions on your own, but I do think it was a worse product overall this year than we've seen in previous years. But just because of these finals and the Western Conference finals, you're at least left with a very good taste in your mouth from this season. But my God, was that necessary? Because the opening rounds of the playoffs, that was some of the worst horseshit I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was not great, that's for sure. And I usually will watch the Eastern Conference, especially like the first round, but I just couldn't get through much of it this year. There's a lot of it that I just skipped because I could not get into it. So it's sad, but like you said, I think we ended on a high note. That's the good news. Hopefully next year it'll turn around again. Because remember, 2015 was insane, like especially in the West. The race out there was ridiculous. So maybe we were just owed a down year after that. I don't know.
Well, it makes sense. Yeah. I mean, no, it was a great year last year around. But you're absolutely right, especially regarding the East. When I was watching the Eastern Conference playoffs, I couldn't get into Boston, Atlanta. I mean, I knew Boston would be good, and I knew Atlanta, you know, had a good season last year and all. But at no point did I feel like, well, one of these teams can go to the finals. Mm-hmm. I just knew that both of them were doomed. We all did, and that just lowered the enjoyment of it.
Yeah, and it doesn't help, like, you know, there's always injuries, but then as Bradley goes down and it's like, there goes any chances had to be interesting at all. So, yeah, but like you said, it's so strange the number of teams that are trying to blow it up. It's like, there's been that debate all year long, too. It's like, is it better to start over if you feel like you're not going to win a championship, or... You know, there's obviously some merit to staying together and being really good. And, hey, there's human element. Like, you don't know what's going to happen to another team. If somebody else gets knocked out for some reason, injury or anything else, you're right there. Or do you want to go all the way back to zero? It's an interesting argument. And I mean, I have to agree that, you know, I'd rather my team be really good than be terrible. But I mean, there is... I guess a shelf life for every team. You know, there is, like you've talked about the Bulls. You want to break up what they've got going now because you feel like it's time to start. You know, we haven't been able to break through, and everybody's getting older, so it's time. Which I can understand. Yeah. It's interesting. I just think, you know, I'm wondering how long this whole Warriors reign is going to last. So everyone's acting like it's here for a long time. And I think they're going to be good for many years. But I just don't know if everybody needs to overreact, you know, to the small ball thing. It's like, I want to see how long it really lasts. Now, a lot of teams are going for length and for just smaller quicker. So maybe it'll be around for a while. But I just think these trends have a way of, you know, recycling and coming back around. It would be great if, you know, a few years down the line we go back to the true centers being in the league. But it's just, I don't know. It's interesting. I don't think they need to, like I said, overreact completely. And we can go back to, we didn't really talk about what Joe Lacob said when he said it. We kind of avoided that, and it's probably been beaten into the ground. But I just think, you know, obviously what he said is not why they lost, but kind of what happened is why you don't say things like that, because you really don't know what can happen. You know, rooting for a team that's won more than one of these in the last like 20 years, I would say I've seen it all. Like, I've seen the Spurs only kept a championship team together once in five championship teams. Yeah, whether you want to keep them together or not, things happen. And like you said, as soon as the pieces start leaving, the chemistry changes, the threats change, everything changes. So you just don't know. And then, like they saw this year, you know, they got torn down last year for playing teams that weren't healthy. And they said, what can we do? We played who was in front of us. And that's absolutely the truth. But then they saw this year, you know, it's harder to compete when you're not at 100%. And a lot of times, teams aren't. It's just a way of life in the NBA. So that all was interesting to me.
I think in part Michael Jordan's Bulls sort of ruined the NBA in that regard, because when they won two times three in a row, that hadn't been done since the Celtics, I believe in the 60s. Someone might correct me on that one. So it was like a whole new way of seeing things, that he was a team that could win three in a row. Mm-hmm. Twice in the 90s in this modern age. So that somehow became, not, I don't want to say the norm, but the expectation. And then when the Lakers did it in the early 2000s, that sort of cemented this idea that you had to win three in a row to be considered truly great. And the Spurs have got a lot of heat for never repeating. But that's ridiculous, because they won five.
Right.
And you have to look at the big picture. And as you say, which I couldn't agree with more, is things happen. Like, the Ray Allen shot is like the perfect, perfect situation. If Duncan is in there and he somehow boxes, I think, Bosch out of the way. I mean, and he grabs that rebound, the Spurs win it. They win everything. But then in 2014, it could be a whole different series. Yep. Because then Miami would come in and with a totally different mindset, and the Spurs probably wouldn't have run them over in the way that they did, because the Spurs wouldn't have had that chip on their shoulder. So, yeah, it is so random. And yeah. I think we as fans need to accept that the NBA is random, especially to enjoy ourselves. I don't want to see anything that we already know from the season's beginning. I think this was a hell of a lot of fun to see a big time surprise. And people have been like calling me out in the day, you know, in Denmark, because like, yeah, you said the Warriors were going to win. No, I just gave you my prediction. I mean, I didn't know. I liked the fact that we saw something different. I liked the fact that we saw an upset. I love upsets. Right. That's terrific. And it keeps the game interesting. Like, wouldn't we have all been bored as hell if the Dubs had come in and won four straight? Yeah. Boom, finals done.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a million times better, obviously, what we got. Yeah. I mean, like I said, I'm sure Warriors fans didn't enjoy it, but yeah, it was fantastic to watch the Cavaliers respond, because I'm sure none of us really expected them to do it. So not only respond, but yeah, to come back from 3-1, that has never been done in the finals before.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And of course, the Draymond card is going to be pulled at some point, and I get that. But, I mean, I have a hard time accepting that as a factor, because he put himself in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fair enough. That specific non-foul on LeBron or whatever happened in that skirmish there, that's, yeah, you could argue the merits of that all day long. But I'm looking at all the technicals and the flagrants he picked up prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he put himself in this situation, Warriors fans wish to admit that or not. And that's what I have a problem with. So when people say, well, if he had played, well, he couldn't because he screwed up. So, like, this just sticks to the facts. Like, he screwed up. That's why he wasn't there. So I think it's a shame that people take something away from the Cavs just because Draymond wasn't there.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah. I think there's an argument to be made there, a small one, as far as him not being there for a game. But if anything, yeah, the responsibility for that goes on to him, not the NBA. You could argue that he should have been suspended earlier in the playoffs. He got away plenty of times, you know, and he should have learned then. And he didn't. He just keeps doing the same stuff. He keeps, you know, you've seen him do that game after game, too, where he gets a technical and he's still going after the referees. And he's lucky they don't throw him out. So, you know, and still I don't think, you know, that that's a great argument either against what the Cavs did, because they still beat him three times with Draymond. I just, like you said, that's on his shoulders, if anything. And it looked like he was going to redeem himself because he had a fantastic Game 7. He looked like he was not going to let them lose, but it just didn't quite work out for him. But, yeah, it's, I don't know. I don't know, bud. I'd have to agree with you, though. That's on him.
It's just weird seeing, like, all the narratives out there.
Mm-hmm.
Because this, to me, was arguably one of the most entertaining finals series I've ever seen. And that's not arguable, by the way. But it is, like, it's subjective. But, like, maybe a top five for me. And I have this tendency every summer to just go to YouTube and watch old finals series because, I just love the intensity. This one, in my eyes, is like an instant classic. Just like it was in 2014. The dominance of the Spurs. I must have watched like Game 5 over and over again because that was so good, so good, so entertaining. And this for me, the surprise factor, LeBron's redemption, everything, the whole storyline to it is just, it's so great. And I just the fact that people crab on it, I just don't get it. Like it seems that narratives are beginning to push the overall enjoyment of the league. Mm-hmm. And that's, from my perspective, a concern.
Yeah, it's just not necessary, like you said. So we just enjoy things as they come. I understand that those in media have a job to do. Like, I love how we sit here talking about it. I guess technically that's what we're doing, but we're also just shooting the breeze, Morton.
we're just and you know what? Here's our like preface. We're not getting paid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is totally a for free type of thing.
Yeah, completely.
So, yeah. So we might as well be like in a barbershop right now, but we're not.
Yeah, or next to Skip Bayless because you know, I can't imagine him being paid at all, but if somehow he is. Like, wow, he wanted Kyrie for the MVP after seeing what LeBron did. Like, obviously, he was trolling. He wanted retweets. He wanted all those things, but
yeah, he's going down with that ship, though. He's not backing off, I guess.
It's so fitting he's moving to Fox, of all places.
It's special. That's real special. Yeah. That, you know what? I forgot. You mentioned about the argument against the Spurs and how, you know, to be a real dynasty, you got to win in consecutive years.
Mm.
And I'm kind of glad you brought that up just because I've always wanted to say that. It's like, first of all, I just feel like Phil Jackson is trolling Spurs fans because he loves to do it. So, I don't know how much I give to that. But I will say I would rather have my team be a 50-win team every year, be in contention, win 5 championships over however many years, then, you know, win 3 in a row, and then be out of the playoffs for a few years, and then win 2, and then be out again, you know. I would rather have my team be good every freaking year. And I wouldn't trade that for, if you want to call it a dynasty technically or not, I don't care. I really do not. It's been a pleasure watching them do what they do. So really, really could not care any less.
if you look at like the championship window Dallas had for a long while, and let's assume for a second they don't make it to the finals in 2011 or maybe loses it, like they would still have had such a long ass open window just to be competitive with Dirk, and before Jason, it was Steve Nash and it was Michael Finley, and then they switched like their roster around a little bit, but they stayed in the playoff picture. I loved how Mark Cuban set those guys up for like that 12-year window. That I think it must have been so much fun to be a Dallas fan all those years, even if you took away the one title in 11. I think every Dallas fan was just loving every second of it. So I would agree with that.
I'm glad.
So just to wrap it up, Sarah, regarding LeBron and the fact that he won it in Cleveland, a town that hasn't won anything since 1964, which is utterly amazing. Like, what does this mean for not only his legacy? You know, I think we all know what it means for his legacy, but like the legacy of him in Cleveland specifically. Like, is he a god now?
I was just gonna say, that's the word that comes to mind, isn't it? You have to hold him up, because
yeah.
I'm sure he is, you know. He already, it's funny, because you always say about players, like, oh, if they win a championship in that town, they'll never buy a drink there again. I think he already probably was at that status in Cleveland. Yeah. I mean, I guess it was iffy because he left for a little bit there, but once he came back, I mean, he's such a great player. He was always kind of the chosen favorite son, and then to do this, I mean, I can't even imagine. Like, I couldn't even put that into words, what I'm sure he means to the entire state. I have a friend who, I knew him back in like second and third grade, and we haven't really seen each other since then, because that's kind of the way it is when we were both military brats. So he ended up in Alaska, I ended up in Texas. But he was like the most diehard Cleveland and just Ohio in general fan that I've ever known. Like, the most diehard fan, period, that I know. He was dedicated, like, when we were kids, I have pictures of him still. He's like in Ohio State gear. He was a huge Cleveland Indian fan, and especially the Cavs, too. And so I was thrilled for him after Game 7. It's like he finally got one, and it's Father's Day, and he's a father, and he's you know, his father passed on the Ohio fandom to him. And I was reading a post that they made to each other on Facebook this morning, and I was like welling up with tears just reading it, you know, because it means so much to them to have each other and to have this championship and to be able to celebrate it together. So, yeah, I can't even, I'm sure LeBron is, like you said, just about on God status, probably, at this point.
That's a beautiful story. sports can be special. I mean,
yep.
This is one of the things that I get asked a lot about in my life, especially from, like, female coworkers. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, Morten, you write about sports, and you talk into a microphone about them. Like, why? Why is that important? It's just people walking around with a ball. No, it's more than that. It's there's feeling, there's camaraderie, there's teamwork, there are personal interactions that come with it. It's not so much the game and the sport itself, it's what surrounds it.
Right.
The feelings around it. I don't think I can ever convince a non-sports person to get a sense of how important it is, and that's fine. But if they somehow experience it on their own, they'll all go like, "Oh, I get it. It makes sense now." I get why people always say. I also say that, yeah, sports is a waste of time. We should talk about politics and the important stuff. I get the sense of it, but like, what is life without the enjoyment factor?
Mm-hmm.
Like, whatever you're into, if it's sports or if it's movies or puppet shows, I mean, whatever the hell it is, you need that
right.
one outlet in your life. And for us, it's sports. And I couldn't be happier. I think that fulfills me in every way imaginable. Like, I have my 4-year-old son who comes up to me and you know, sits next to me on the couch when I turn on a game, and he asks me, like, what is his name? What is his name? What is the team called? Why, that man jumped a lot. Like, there's just something special about it, because you just know he's going to think back on it when he's older, and he's going to remember sitting next to daddy watching basketball games in the early morning. And I just think that carries so much weight. And in these finals in particular, I could totally see all these Cleveland fans, Ohio fans, honestly, just embrace and have a moment that'll last them the rest of their lives.
Yeah.
And that's special.
Definitely. And it's, like you said, it's more to the fact that, you know, who are you watching the game with, you know? It's like, for me, I've always been with my family, especially when the Spurs have won titles. But it's like, even when they don't win, it doesn't matter. It's time spent together. And, you know, I'd say that for Cleveland fans, I'm sure this title is all the more sweeter because of all the years of misery, you know? And yeah. And I'm sure they'd say, well, it's easy for you to say that because you're a Spurs fan. Yeah, well, I'm also a Philadelphia Eagles fan, still waiting. So I can tell you. And just from 2013, like, I'm so grateful for that whole experience, that whole freaking year from June 13 to June 14.
Yeah.
Because it was the highest of highs and the lowest of lows that sports can give you. You know, and I don't, like you said, I don't know that we would have had the one without the other. So I don't care that they didn't repeat. Like, I'd take that whole ride over again in an instant if you asked me. I remember saying in 13 to my mom, I'm crying tonight no matter what. I'm going to cry if they win. I'm going to cry if they lose. And I said the same thing in 14. And I cried both times. I remember crying, like, on the floor of my mother's bathroom in 13. I was so devastated. You know, she's like, it's okay. Like, you know, because you do. You think, it's just sports. It's okay. You gotta let this one go. And I woke up with that feeling for most of the summer. I would wake up, and it was like how you feel literally when someone you love has passed away. You think the first thing you think about when you wake up, and you think, you try to tell yourself it was a bad dream, and then you realize that it wasn't, and it hits you all over again. And it was like that all freaking summer. And then to have that team give us the ride that they gave us, to show the character that they showed, and to come back, man.
That was like a newborn.
Yeah, I couldn't ask for anything more. And it's funny, too, because I was thinking about, like, you know, we were talking about how everybody matters on the team. Like, say Patty Mills had been injured that year, they may not have won in 2014. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was actually hurt in 13, and he didn't play as much anyway. That was the thing that happened the next year where he became more part of the team. It's like, all that stuff matters. And I don't think, you know, we always notice as much because we just want to talk about, well, Timmy and LeBron, or LeBron and Steph. Well, there are other things going on that contributes to who wins the championship and who doesn't.
Yeah, Richard Jefferson's story in this finals was amazing. And then he announces his retirement, which is just, in a way, fitting. Mm-hmm. Like, so I know people would like, no, don't retire, RJ. You just won a title. Come back to repeat it. No. For him, the golden moment was winning a title and then quitting while he was ahead, which is beautiful in its own right. That's why I hate watching the 98 finals, like the last game, when Mike took that last shot. I don't hate watching the shot, but I hate the fact that when I watch it, I'm reminded that was his last one. And by the way, everything he did in a supposedly blue uniform, photoshopped, Premiere Pro'd, I don't care. Didn't happen.
Did not happen.
La 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 la. Covering my eyes. But you just knew that was the last shot. And that was heartbreaking, as well as tremendously joyful, because it won them the championship, and he went out the way he did. And man, sports are amazing. Sarah.
They really are.
I mean, yeah.
So they're a reflection of life. It's not, you know, and sometimes, you're getting away from stuff and it is escapism somewhat, but it is more than that. And it actually reminds me of, did you ever watch the show Friday Night Lights?
Friday Night Lights?
Yes.
Nope.
Okay, well, it's probably, in my opinion, one of the best shows to ever be on television. And a lot of people stayed away from it. I remember seeing that argument as people who weren't football fans or who didn't like sports. They're like, I don't want to watch a show about sports. And it was about so much more than that. And that's kind of sports in general. But I think that show was a great reflection of that being true. It's that sports can bring out so much in people. And like you said, it's just a reflection of life. It's just a different way of looking at it. So, also, first of all, I would recommend that show to you and to anyone who hasn't watched it, because I think it was a shame that it didn't find more of an audience. But like you said, sports, it's the same thing with sports. I think, if there's just a way that you could get people to engage, I think that they would see what we see. But, I mean, it's okay if they don't like it. everybody likes different things. Like you said, it's whatever works for you. So, that's okay.
Just added it to my watch list.
Awesome.
Yeah. I was a... I'm just seeing now it's a movie. I thought it was a series, actually.
Yeah, there was a movie, but the series, I think... The movie is good, too, but the series, in my opinion, is even better.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was like a a One Tree Hill type of guy, because when I got lured into that series, I was, I think, 18 or something like that, and it had a very basketball-centric feel to it. Then they later went away from that. It was all about intrigue and murders and whatnot. So it's like, okay, well, fair enough, but I'm already here, so I might as well conclude it. But that first season where it was about basketball and family and yeah, it was obviously it was painted in a very negative portrayal to guys disliking each other, but somehow finding common ground based on basketball. That really appealed to me. And that right now makes me think of something else, because that was around the same time that LeBron was drafted. And I'm thinking here, like, Cleveland fans in 2003, who knew they were getting LeBron in the draft, they've been waiting 13 years to see that draft pick take them to where they wanted to go. Like, screw the Miami trip. Just look at the overall time that they just spent waiting. 13 years. I think that adds a lot to the experience. Like, with all respect to Magic Johnson and the Los Angeles Lakers fans out there, he won a title in his first year. Had he, first won his first title 9 years in, I think it would have been so much more potent.
Mm-hmm. I definitely agree with that. It's funny because you brought that up, and the same friend that I've mentioned, I remember back in 07, him, sending me a note on Facebook trying to, talk trash. He's like, you've been a spoiled fan for way too long, but this year, it's our year. And I was like, oh, buddy. are you serious right now? did Cavs fans really think they were going to... I still don't know if he was joking or if he was for real. That was definitely not your year. But, yeah, all of that sets up to make this so much sweeter. There's no way that it doesn't.
And with those very emotional words, it's time to wrap up this time. And Brian will probably return the next time around. We're not sure. He's got a pretty busy schedule, and the draft is coming up, Sarah, and I'm not sure if we're going to get the last one in. I know that you're not too keen on talking draft prospects.
You can go ahead and say that I'm not good at it, that I don't know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
But we'll figure out when to record the next time. But anyway, it was wonderful talking about basketball and life, Sarah. Always enjoyment.
Same here. Always a pleasure.
We'll talk next time.
All right, see ya.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in store or online at TotalWine.com.
Welcome to Total Wine & More. It's much more than a wine store. It's the eighth wonder of the world.
When people talk about Total Wine & More, they get a little carried away. We're just a big, friendly place run by people with a passion for wine and beer. See, we travel the world to find the best wines from the best regions, and we sell them at the lowest prices anywhere.
And friendly, helpful experts at every turn.
You know what? Maybe we are the eighth wonder of the world.
Shop in-store or online at TotalWine.com.